Hey, coach, welcome to the basketball podcast. Can you believe we made it to episode 400? I'm overflowing with gratitude for every single one of you who has tuned in since we hit publish. Our very first guest was Dave Paulson, who is now doing great work as the head coach at Holy Cross. And I'll never forget the standard he set for this show right out of the gate. He dropped a line that has stuck with me ever since. The game has to look like our practice and not their practice. For me, obviously, that connects in so many ways. If your practices are representative of your games and how you play, players will carry those behaviors into games, and the games will reflect your philosophy rather than your opponent's philosophy. And I thought that was a great quote to start off this episode 400 of the Basketball Podcast. So today, whether you've been here for one episode or all 400 of them, thank you for learning, growing, and sharing the game with me. I'm going to go through a whole bunch of things from the different episodes that I've written down through my years. And obviously, I apologize up front. I'm not going to mention every guest and all of them that become part of our community of people sharing the game. Big shout out to Debbie Peterson, who's the head coach at Eau Claire North. She's been with me through almost this whole journey in some context and works behind the scenes and tremendous coach in her own right, but a tremendous person that helps put together this podcast. And Mark Jablonski. Mark is now an assistant to Trinity University with Marwan El-Rakabawi. Marwan is also a podcast guest, episode 25. Marwan reached out to me online, connected with the information I was sharing about connecting practice to games and transfer of information from practice to games. So he made a leap of faith and flew to a basketball camp I was running in Milwaukee. And we connected there over 3 days where he got a chance to be able to work with me. I got a chance to learn from him. And ever since then, we've been connected. But that led to Mark being a part of his staff and just shows you the power of the podcast with all these connections, all these different people intersecting. And a huge shout out to my wife, Jen. Jen's been two-time guest on the podcast where we've tried to authentically share a little bit of the coaching life, running an online business life, and just the things that go into coaching and parenting and trying to be the best version of yourself. And I'm so grateful and forever thankful for my wife, Jen. She's one of the main reasons why this podcast exists. She pushed and challenged me to be able to start a podcast because originally when I started Basketball Immersion in 2014, there was no podcast. And she was the one that was pushing me saying that you've got to share more and you've got to do a podcast. And I'm grateful that she pushed and challenged me to be able to start the podcast. And she's actually responsible for the name of the podcast because we looked online and we thought it was obvious that the basketball podcast would not exist and not be available to us online. At the time, it was, and it just became a no-brainer. And why not just call it the basketball podcast? And another big shout out to my daughters, Presley and Kennedy. Many of you that follow me online, especially on Instagram, I share part of their journey in youth basketball. And so much of what I share with you over the last 3 years is about my experiences in youth basketball. And I'll get into sharing more of that over time. But as my oldest says, I'm a science experiment for the world of basketball coaches. And that's so true. And I'm so thankful for them. And it's really difficult, no doubt, to be my daughters in the basketball world. And they handle it with such love and passion for basketball. And so grateful for all three of them being a part of my family and all of you being part of my family as well. Just to give you an idea of the 400 episodes, almost 6 million downloads over our years of sharing the game through the podcast, which is absolutely incredible. I'm grateful for that and thankful for that. Some of the top episodes of all time have over 100,000 listens. And number one, episode 183, Joe Mazzulla, Simplified Principles of Play and Teaching Process. No surprise there. Episode 50, Dave Smart, Matchup-Based Offense and Defense. Episode 78, Fran Fraschilla, Best Practice Ideas He Has Learned. Episode 235 with Lynn Roberts on Smart Box Scores, current LA Sparks head coach and current Raptor coach, is episode 112, Darko Rakjavec on Installing an Offense. Then it was Nate Oates, episode 16. He's been on twice, but his first episode, Insights into How We Play and Practice. And then episode 203 with Brandon Payne, Teaching Shooting and Lessons from Working with Steph Curry. Episode 129, Corey Close, Mental Performance Plan. And episode 227, Jim Larranaga, Teaching Method, Flexibility, and Five-Out Offense. And then the 10th most listened to podcast in our time together is episode 206 with Tobin Anderson, Teaching a Pressing Defensive System. in the top 20, maybe some surprises. I just wanted to note a few episodes in the top 20 that may surprise you. Division three head coach Josh Merkel, episode 213, Lessons from Building a National Championship Program. Of course, episode 209, one of our fastest risers, Noah LaRoche, researching and tinkering with basketball since he's been in the news with his work with Memphis Grizzlies and the Miami Heat. Episode 230, Max LaFarge. You may not know that name, but NBA core defensive concepts. He's an assistant coach with the Minnesota Timberwolves, and he does a great job outlining defense in that episode. Episode 220, Kelly Harper, defensive concepts to build their team defense. Former Tennessee head coach, current Missouri head coach. And then internationally, Francesco Nanni, friend of the podcast, teaching out of one-on-one. And then Bryce Tully, emotional intelligence and culture analytics to improve, episode 214. So those were just a few of the episodes that may be outliers in your mind of coaches that may be not as famous, the Joe Mazzullas, the Nate Oates, etc. We know who those coaches are, but some of the outliers that you may not have expected being in the top 20, it just shows that you as coaches want information that can help you regardless of who the coach is. And I'm grateful for that because throughout this whole process of running the podcast, I haven't simply been chasing the biggest name all the time. I've been chasing coaches that obviously want to share, are willing to share, and are willing to openly share. And thank you to all the coaches that have appeared as guests on the basketball podcast. Hey, coach, a brief time out from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute, sponsored by Hoopsalytics. Do you really know which plays, sets, and actions are working for your team? On offense, how valuable are paint touches and post entries? On defense, do you get more stops playing man or zone? Like high-level college and pro teams, you can use an analytics system like Hoopsalytics to get data-driven answers to help guide your in-game strategy and practice emphasis. With Hoopsalytics, you can track any action or set and see the resulting points per possession. Plus the video link stats, you can view your successes and fails and see if it's a play design or execution issue. And you can easily build organized film sessions from these video clips. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Discover how Hoopsalytics can help you make better data-driven coaching decisions. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball today. That's hoopsalytics.com/ball today to learn more and start analyzing your game for free. My plan for episode 400 is to go through a whole bunch of information to be able to share with you, to reconnect you. Big part of my teaching philosophy is what's called reconnections, that you teach something, they experience something, they explore something. And then if they're struggling or they forget it, or maybe we need to refresh it, we call those reconnections. And reconnections are a huge part of my teaching philosophy that we outline extensively in the basketball immersion community as one of our teaching methods. But I wanted to reconnect you with so many of the brilliant things that have been said on the podcast and some of the things that have been meaningful for me. So let's start with the Boston Celtics head coach, Joe Mazzulla. He said, "We broke down simplified principles of play. You're only doing four things within a game. We're either attacking, you're transitioning to defend, you're defending, or you're transitioning to attack. And I tried to keep everything in those four categories." I thought it was just a brilliant way to be able to connect principles of play to style of play and to be able to simplify. These are the things that we need to be good at, and we're going to be good at these things on offense and defense. And he was referencing that in relative to him preparing to be able to coach. Joe Mazzulla and many of the coaches that I'm going to talk about have been former or current Basketball Immersion members, and I'm grateful for them for their support. Another member and huge supporter of Basketball Immersion, the basketball podcast, and a person that I'm extremely grateful for, Dennis Gates. Dennis Gates shared so many wonderful things, and the Missouri basketball program has certainly risen in our time together, and unquestionably one of the best basketball programs, college basketball programs around, that follows a full constraint-led approach to coaching and games approach, and grateful to have been able to connect with them and influence them. But his quote, "My players know that sometimes they have to dig down and not just explain something to me, but give me the different ways that this can be solved, whether it's on the court or off the court." I love this quote because I've had a chance to see this in action with Coach Gates. That this is not just a quote that he shares with us. This is the reality that his players have to constantly be able to dig down and be able to explain things, to be able to share things, to be able to communicate things. And I've seen it in film sessions. I've seen it in practices. I've seen it in his office. And just a great way to be able to look at how we're trying to get players to dive deeper, to go deeper, to be able to connect deeper with all the information that we give them. Another Missouri connection, Phil Pressey. Incidentally, the connection to Dennis Gates and Phil Pressey is Missouri assistant Matt Klein. Matt Klein, again, another one of the early adopters of basketball immersion concepts. When I was at the University of Windsor, Matt was an assistant coach at Eastern Michigan, and he drove across the border. I came to see him, and we spent time together just sharing this information. And he, to his credit, dove deep. He went deep and he made himself an expert in all these things that we share through the basketball immersion community, and has put himself in a situation to be incredibly impactful in Missouri and wherever he ends up coaching in his lifetime, because he's dove into the information and he's one of the early adopters of CLA games approach, decision training, all these different things that we share. But Phil Pressey became someone that he mentored in his time as an assistant at the University of Missouri. And now Pressey is the coach of the Maine Red Claws. Has been, what a cool stat, but Phil Pressey was a player and a coach for the Boston Celtics and a player and a coach for the Maine Red Claws. And I'm not sure how many times that's happened in the world of basketball within an organization, but that's pretty cool. So his quote, "Coaches are teachers. So learning how to teach has been a great challenge for me, but that's something that I bought into. It's going to be new for a lot of people that go into coaching, especially former players. When you're learning new things and when you're growing, there are those things that are called growing pains. So if you're uncomfortable and the things don't seem as easy as they used to be, you're right where you're supposed to be." I just wanted to share that because I thought Coach Pressey just nailed that in terms of our community and the podcast in general, is that we're not just trying to share cliches. We're trying to share authentically what coaches do, authentically things that work, the practical side of things. And some of the things that's particularly I share are sometimes challenging for people. They're confrontational for people. And I never wanted you or anyone else to just adapt things I do. I never wanted you or anyone else to just adopt things I do, to just say, "Oh, Coach Oliver said it, so do it." No, we want you to invest in your learning. We want you to muck around in your with your learning. And then we want you to be uncomfortable, because from that uncomfortable becomes the, because as Phil Pressey says, when you're uncomfortable, that's when learning happens. And you don't have to be uncomfortable all the time. Certainly, it's just like a player. We want them to be uncomfortable sometimes in practice when they're learning and trying to grow. But when it comes to games, we want them to be comfortable. And that process of kind of being uncomfortable, being comfortable again, and then going back to being uncomfortable again is the learning process and the process that we embrace within our community. People ask me a lot, "Oh, what's one of my favorite guests of all time?" And I'll always say something, certainly, that is probably a political answer, in the sense that I'll say, "Hey, listen, my next guest will be my favorite guest." And that's certainly true. I've always enjoyed every conversation I've had on the podcast. But episode 20 with Andrea Trinchecuri, famous European coach, just a brilliant basketball mind. But his quote, "At a certain point, I forced my players to watch games and to have a conversation the day after. Because how can you be better if you don't see the best?" And I know a lot of coaches have talked about this, and players, and certainly my daughters to a certain extent, and just players in general that I'm coaching at the youth level. They don't consume games. They don't watch games the same way that we do as coaches. And some of them don't watch games at all. So being intentional in trying to get them to watch things or to watch games and to be able to have conversations about those things beyond just, "Oh, that was a great play," and to dive deeper in terms of those things. Those are things that are very intentional. And a great coach like Andrea sharing that with us, I thought was really impactful for me to be able to dive into this youth space later, much later than after I had this quote given to me. But to be able to get, yeah, I've got to be very intentional to be able to help my players understand the game, and not just from the perspective of practice, but also how they watch and consume games. So even challenging players, like at a practice, to say, "Hey, listen, the Nuggets are playing the Thunder tonight. Hey, I want you to watch the first 10 minutes. Everyone watch the first 10 minutes, and then I'll go around the next practice we're together and ask a question of a few of them, or we'll ask it as a group, or we'll do it as a group debrief," to be able to say intentionally, "Hey, what stood out to you? What is something that they do in those games that we do, or that we're trying to do?" Obviously, we don't do it as well, but you get the idea that we're trying to connect it to them. And they don't all do it, and we're certainly only making it mandatory, but we do want to create the intent of watching games and to be able to learn from watching games. Dave Smart, with really good coaches, practice doesn't end when practice ends. Practice ends after you've spoken to all the kids that you were hard on that day or struggled that day. This concept, I've shared it many times through different platforms, but this concept of aftercare, like Dave's an intense coach. He's a confrontational coach in the sense that he wants you to be competitive. He wants you to compete all the time. But he also understands psychologically that one of the most important parts of that is what do I do for those players after I'm not coaching them? What does aftercare look like? How do I help them when they've struggled or I've created an intentional struggle for them? And I thought that was just a great part of the podcast when he brought that to light for all of us. Doug Novak, friend of the podcast, been on the podcast twice. Just really excited anytime I get a chance to learn from Doug and talk to Doug and share with Doug. But he shared this concept that's always stuck with me, and that's this concept of being relentlessly patient teaching, regardless of the results. That the reason that you're here in the first place is to help people get better, enjoy the experience. Now, winning does help people enjoy this experience, but you can't get there right away sometimes. And just that kind of permission to hold space and to be patient and understanding that learning is this non-linear process and it doesn't happen just from I teach it, they do it. I teach it, they experience it, they struggle, they grow, they get better, they struggle, they grow, they get better. This relentless patience. And I just love that phrasing that Doug has shared with us. And I've kept that in my mind throughout all of my coaching since I learned it. In addition to Andrea, who was a big part of, hey, when did this podcast become something big for me? Was like when I got Andrea on and I got Itoar Messina on. Messina, if you've never had a chance to watch him in clinic, arguably the greatest tactical clinic in the history of the game, just from a pure tactic standpoint, that guy gives authentic, deep dive information in a clinic. And certainly it's amazing for coaches to be able to ever listen to him. But one of the things that I took away from when his podcast was on, and again, if anyone asks me, like I'll say Messina was one of those highlight podcasts just because it felt like, okay, this is a little bit different. We're getting someone who I really wanted to talk to and had a chance to talk to. And that was really a big moment for me to just be able to have an hour conversation with him. But he said, there are concepts that are basic in terms of how you would like people in your organization to relate to each other. And respect is a major one. It's easy to respect important people and maybe lose attention to the people who are working in the shade. And I just thought that was just a brilliant thing from someone that's achieved so much and worked within so many great organizations. And just constantly a reminder to us that the person that may seem insignificant is absolutely significant to the success of your team, your players, your organization, everything that you do within your program. And taking moments to be able to acknowledge and recognize people or just be nice to people and be human to people, such a beautiful part of the coaching process. So many of those relationships that I've developed with people through coaching that aren't necessarily coaches and just have stuck with me for my whole life. Some of my really good connections have come outside of basketball and keeping my mind open to that. And as Messina said, respect and understanding the importance of everyone that kind of shapes your program. And that's just beautiful. Lynn Roberts, as I said, Utah coach at the time, but current LA Sparks head coach. This one stuck with me. And I share this with everyone because, again, we talk about like, how can you get away from being a yeller or punishing players or holding players accountable by making them run? Classic line I always use is if running fixed problems, we'd have no problems. Lynn Roberts actually gave us an actionable way to do this. And I want to reconnect you with this. The cowbell and the air horn. In practice, successful actions, let's say a great play, hustle play, big rebound, are immediately celebrated with a cowbell, while negative actions, turnovers, bad shots, whatever you define them as, are marked with an air horn. So the idea of this is that we give instant nonverbal feedback without stopping the flow of practice. So it's like instead of stopping things and talking about things or punishing things or running things, it's just, hey, this was good. Yes, move on. And this was bad. Hey, move on. But our aim is always to have more cowbells than or air horns. And it creates accountability and it creates understanding. And that's the ultimate example of shaping things with a constraint-led approach in the sense that we don't have to actually coach it. We can just bring light to it. And that's really the mindset of like bronze, silver, and gold medal shots that I've talked about extensively is like sometimes in practice, all you hear me call out is the type of shot. I'll say bronze, gold, or silver medal, and that's all they'll hear. And they'll be playing and they'll hear that and they'll understand that. And that just gives them instant nonverbal feedback without stopping the flow of practice. In this case, it is verbal feedback, but you get the idea. Dusty May, a two-time podcast guest, thankful, grateful, incredibly grateful. So many of these coaches. Dusty's been an incredible supporter of my sharing of the game, and I'm so grateful for him. But I had a chance this year to spend 2 days at the University of Michigan watching practice and spending time with Dusty, just being able to watch him work. And it was just a pleasure. And I would say, and I've said this to many coaches throughout the time since I've been there in the fall, but he basically over 10 pra or two practices, he only stopped practice 10 times maybe to talk to the group. Most of the practice was, again, constraint led, game based, and most of the feedback was very much what I call mini conversations. It was intentional, it was direct, and it was directed towards the individuals that needed it. And it wasn't big speeches or anything raw or motivational. It was just, we're practicing, we're playing basketball, and we're going to get better at basketball by playing basketball, which is that aligns with me. But the one takeaway I want to give you, and I know I understand this isn't from the podcast, but I wanted to share this because it connects with all of you, is traditionally as coaches, we do one trip, two trip, three trips, or something like that. We're going to do this transition drill. We're going to do three trips to the floor, and then the drill's over. And I asked him, said, because he was doing different drills that look like that, but then there was never no specific ending point. And when I asked him about it, he said, listen, I don't want my players to know when the trips are going to end. So when I blow the whistle, the trips end. And it created this variability in practice that kind of left this kind of connected for me back to like, why do we not have a clock in practice? Because we don't want players to look at the clock. We don't want players to understand how to pace themselves. We want them to practice and be present in practice. So that's what it reminded me of, is this concept of keeping your players very present in your practice because they don't know when it's when this particular segment of this, what would traditionally say be three trips to the floor, when it would end. And I thought that was just a great thing. Phil Martelli, a long incredible college coach, he used this line, growth and improvement are the goals, not the trophies. And I just love that. That's such a great way of being able to explain things, especially I've used that kind of to parents over time since I've learned that. And Lenny Aikoff, again, incredible coach, someone I've had a chance to connect with in really some meaningful ways without even ever having watched him run a practice. But the closest thing to a shortcut in coaching is having the right mentors. Wow. I cannot emphasize this enough. I'll talk about some of my mentors throughout this, but Coach Zdrahal, Coach Hooks, Coach Razzo. Like I think about all these coaches in my early years of basketball. And they didn't have to be the greatest basketball coaches of all time. And in some cases they were, but they were great people. They were great mentors and they were great competitors and they had great balance and understanding and they had incredible support for people that wanted to live outside the box. And that's what I really reflect on is that my best mentors in life, and Lenny was referring to this in some capacities, finding a mentor that will support you, but also challenge you and be able to tell you when they think, I don't agree, and also support you when you don't agree with them. And I think those are some of the best relationships I've had and the best friendships I've had is that I can have a conversation with someone and we don't have to agree. We don't have to agree, but we both are there to be able to support each other and hold space for each other. And understand that at the end of the day, it's not about us. It's about what happens within our team and within our practices and what's the best thing for them. And I think Lenny nailed that with this quote. Speaking of mentors, Larry Shyatt, episode 96. And people ask me, like, generally on the podcast, like, I'm overly prepared. I'll say going into Larry Shyatt podcast, I was definitely overly prepared. But basically, Larry just took over the podcast. And I really ask a lot of questions because he just kept going and going and sharing gem after gem. And I think one of my mentors, again, without ever having met them, was Howard Stern. Listening to so many Howard Stern shows during my time commuting a lot, when I used to commute a lot back in Ontario and just having that on and listening to how, not necessarily the vulgar part of it, I'm not talking about that, but listening to how he was able to get deeper with guests. And get beyond, as I said, the superficial very quickly, very early on. And he was able to get things out of celebrities in conversations that I was like, wow, that's really cool that they're talking about that. And I think it's become better, obviously. Podcasts and different things have definitely become, I think, more reflective of people's humanity and people's vulnerability. But this podcast with Larry Shyatt was one of those moments for me where I was just like, I can remove my ego and I can just sit here and take in the wisdom. And contribute when I need to, but I don't need to. And I think that was a really important kind of growth point for me as a podcaster, was just that part there, where I think early on I felt like I always had to be a part of it. And is there enough of me? Is there too much of me? And that kind of whole kind of push pull back and forth. But with Larry, it just became this one of these things that I just realized that, listen, sometimes I can just be there, I can create the platform, and I can let you, as great people and great coaches and great humans, just shine and be the best version of yourself. And Larry did that in the podcast. And those of you that know me know that Larry's been a big influence. And Matt Driscoll, huge shout out to him. A lot of my contacts and network grew from getting in my car when I was 23, 24 years old and driving out west to do my master's at the University of Victoria. And I called up randomly. We had to use a phone back then. And I randomly called University of Wyoming because it was on a route that I could drive through the US to get out to Victoria, BC. And I just called up the Wyoming and I ended up talking to Matt Driscoll, who was the director of basketball operations at the time for Larry Shyatt. And I said, "Hey, listen, can I come work basketball camp?" And he said, "In fact, why don't you work 2 weeks?" So I ended up spending 2 weeks with their program as a young coach, young person. And those relationships have persisted. And Larry Shyatt and Matt Driscoll, one of the reasons I got connected with the Florida Clinic, that famous Florida Clinic. And one of the opportunities I had there was to be able to present very early on in basketball immersion and on decision training. And I still remember ending presenting in the University of Florida practice facility in front of twos of coaches. I wasn't sure at that time, certainly, what the influence of what I was going to share was going to be. But for me, it was a humbling experience and a grateful experience. But Dell Harris, great Dell Harris, stood up at the end of my presentation and asked Larry, "Can I say something?" And of course, Larry was going to say yes. And Dell Harris said, to all the coaches, goes, "Hey, this is the future. This is all about decision training." And I've posted that video on my YouTube channel just for posterity's sake. But it was quite the moment and one of those opportunities where, you know, as coaches, we're really bad at celebrating, and I'm definitely part of that, really bad at celebrating kind of small wins, and big victories are usually the thing that we're always trying to achieve. And just being able to have that moment, and I remember that moment so brilliantly because my family was there as well, and just a cool moment for me. And grateful for Matt Driscoll, Larry Shyatt, and that whole connection that happened from there. But Larry Shyatt's quote, "Great teams win without their coach. You're not looking at your coach every single decision. You're going to play on your instincts, on your practice, and for each other." And again, just something that really connects with me. One of the goals of all of us as coaches is to be able to foster independence in our players. Independent performers, independent learners. That's a goal. So great teams win without their coach is actually a compliment that players can play on their instincts, on how they practiced, and then obviously for each other as well, and go from there. Another huge influence on me and the podcast and my sharing the game, current G League assistant coach Charles Klass with Portland, a longtime Denver Nuggets assistant, longtime NBA assistant coach as well. We connected again when I was at the University of Windsor and he was with the Detroit Pistons with Stan Van Gundy. But Charles came across and I remember still that day that we spent time in a classroom just going through so many things together, just him and I and talking basketball. And I remember my wife, Jen, a few times calling me going, "Are you coming home?" And I was like, "Hey, no, probably not going to come home for a little bit." And it was just one of those really cool, brilliant moments in my coaching life where I got to spend time with someone who has become a lifelong friend. And anyways, the connection, Charles, you got to do the podcast. It's time. Everyone wants you on the podcast. And he famously, for those in my circle, has not done it yet, but he will at some point. But anyways, he connected me in a hotel room when I went and watched the Nuggets play, of all things, with Benno Udrih, who is currently the G League head coach for Milwaukee. But Benno at the time was still player. And like in that transition from player to coach and figuring out what he was doing. And we had a great conversation. We were able to do a podcast together. And he said, "When you're coming off the bench, I think you should be focusing on, okay, I'm going into the game and we're tied. I'm coming out of the game and we're plus four." I think it's very important to look at that plus minus when you're a backup player. And I really have taken that to heart over time, that I've really tried to help players that are on the bench to understand that that's one of the things. It's not to put pressure on them. It's just to understand impact. Okay, listen, we're down 10. You're going in the game. Let's give us some impact. And often, again, players have felt, at least in debriefs and times that we've had those end of season conversations, that many players have reflected on those things and said, "Those are some of the best things, those actionable things. What do I do as a player? What's my responsibility as a player coming off the bench?" And Benno shared that with me in the podcast, and that's something that stuck with me for a very long time. Of course, this podcast is, if it's my philosophy and it's the things that I'm sharing with basketball immersion, it's certainly going to reflect a lot of modern teaching methods and things that have evolved in teaching over time. And Rob Gray, the great skill acquisition sharer, professor, author, podcaster, the person that's really driven home for me, perception action coupling and understanding, a deep understanding. Certainly it's more scientific, but I can encourage all coaches to listen to his podcast and just dive deep and geek out a little bit on some of the information that, yeah, sometimes it's hard to digest, but at the end of the day, I think what he does a great job of is giving us the evidence-based ideas, but in really practical ways. Anyways, one of his quotes, "We're dying for creative players." And this is a conversation that still comes to this day with me. At the highest levels, whether it's soccer, football, basketball, all these different sports, people are always referring to, we need more creative players. We need more creative players. And we're dying for creative players that can create scoring opportunities by making good decisions. Then you go to practice, and how often do you let an athlete make a decision? That's Rob's quote. And obviously, that drives home many of the things and says it better than how I say it, but it's true. If I want to just say, hey, coach, just reflect on your practice, how often did a player have to make a decision? How often did they have to do something in a drill, in a practice, in a game situation, in your practices, where they couldn't predetermine or memorize what they were going to do and just do it? And that's just a great way to be able to understand it. Gail Foulkes, Davidson women's basketball head coach. What a great phrasing for this. And we've had many coaches reference this, but this is just incredible phrasing. So one-on-one, get it done. One-on-two, it's not for you. And one-on-three, you've got to come sit with me. One-on-one, get it done. One-on-two, it's not for you. And one-on-three, you've got to come sit with me. Just a great way of being able to phrase kind of those penetration reaction decisions with the player with the ball. If I'm one-on-one, I'm going to score. If I draw two, I pass. And obviously, if I shoot it versus three, then we've got a bigger problem. And just great reference there. Great, just a great way to be able to phrase things. The GOAT of all GOATs in college coaching, in my mind, Jim Crutchfield. I just love it. If you haven't listened to Jim Crutchfield on the basketball podcast, there's two of them. To this day, people are still surprised. He doesn't do a lot of press, doesn't do a lot of sharing like that. But we connected live in person thanks to Brad Stevens and Brad Stevens Roundtable when I got a chance to go speak at that when he was the head coach of the Boston Celtics. And Crutchfield did the podcast in part because Stan Van Gundy did the podcast first. These crazy connections that you just don't know. And when I sent Crutchfield an email, first of all, he responded to a cold call email at the time. But he responded to an email in part because Stan Van Gundy had done the podcast and he was curious. So he listened to the podcast and then he said, okay, this might be something that I'd want to do. And one of the main reasons I think a lot of coaches do it is this isn't a deep dive on your bio. This is a chance to be able to show off in some ways. Not that's your intent, coaches, but to be able to show your knowledge, to show your understanding of the game, to show your philosophy, to show your kind of your program off unintentionally without talking about it. To be able to, again, share without selling. And that's a beautiful thing is I think a lot of us are immediately connected to a coach and say, hey, I want to play for that coach. And there's been many of those on my time on the podcast where I've said, oh, I'd love to play for that coach because it connected with me. And they weren't trying to sell me on playing for them, but they were sharing authentically who they are and what they do. And that's the power of this kind of platform. And Crutchfield has really inspired so many of us. But the thing that he drove home in that first podcast and his second podcast as well was during the off season, we don't do traditional conditioning. We play a lot more 5-on-5, but the way we play is exhausting. It's full court, face guard, man-to-man, trap chase. And again, since then, I think a lot of coaches have connected with that idea of playing more basketball, especially in that off season of 5-on-5, because again, it takes care of a lot of the things that you want to do to be able to help players get better and players enjoy it as well. Big thing. Ryan Pinon, again, incredible sharer, one of the goats of sharing throughout the basketball world. So grateful he's a head coach now and he's been on the podcast before. But his quote, at the end of the day, I find as a coach, there's a few reasons you're not doing something. You're either not good enough to do it or you don't care enough to do it. And I just love this because it was like this concept of driving home that, yeah, sometimes you don't do things because you're not good at it. And sometimes you don't do things because you don't care about them. But you got to figure out what's those things that we need to get better at and what's those things we need to care about more. And that's really just the mindset of Sean Threw with that quote for me. Big shout out as well, Janet Butler. You may not know the name. Longtime college assistant coach was with Lisa Stockton at Tulane and with Bridget Mitchell at Fordham. And both those coaches came on the podcast in part because Janet Butler reached out to me and suggested them and connected me with them. Coaches, you may be surprised by this, but that doesn't happen very much. It really doesn't. I can still remember an email from Eric Musselman very early on in the podcast where he just said he was grateful for the podcast and he enjoyed listening to it. And that meant so much to me at the time, for sure. And they still, all those things mean so much to me. But more when people like Janet reach out to me and suggest someone, you think that happens a lot. It actually doesn't happen very often at all. So I do encourage everyone, be brave. It doesn't always work out. I've certainly made conscious choices with the podcast and hope that you respect that I can't have everyone on clearly. So I generally try and stick with head coaches for the most part, unless they're NBA or pro coaches. But I try and keep that just because I can't have everyone on. And that's why I've tried to create some other platforms like the basketball coaching class and whatnot, which so many great assistant coaches have contributed to and helped build their personal brand. But Janet Butler is now at the University of Denver with DeShoya Woods. Coach Woods, coaches, this hits home. Since I moved to the United States, now going on 6 years ago from Canada, this quote particularly hits home with me. Some people are born into circumstances that they can thrive in. And some of us are born into circumstances that we're going to need some help to thrive in. Just the wording of that had such an impact on me. And I've looked at things always in a similar way, certainly with my upbringing in Canada. But coming to America, like so many conversations I've had with people have just been, I worked hard. I deserve this success. And other people aren't successful because they haven't worked hard. And that's reductive in so many ways. But this quote really brought it home to me to understand a little bit how to express this to people that it's, yeah, you work hard, you thrived. Other people work hard and they don't thrive because they need some help to rise above the circumstances. And I think that applies to our basketball teams, that applies to our schools, to our businesses, to all the different things that we're involved in our world. And that, yeah, some people do need a little bit of extra help. And that's our mandate as coaches always is the people that need extra help get a little bit of extra attention. Certainly, we treat everyone as equals, but we certainly do coach people differently because some people need different coaching. And that's a beautiful thing. And grateful for Janet, grateful for Coach Woods as well. Corey Close, man, what an incredible job she's done at UCLA. And I'm so grateful for them and all their success last year getting to the Final Four. But Coach Close did a whole podcast essentially on the mental skills side of things. And obviously, she's an incredible coach, can talk about anything, but I'm so grateful that she really dove deep and shared so much on this topic because it's always been something that connected with me. And this concept of integrating sports psych is that we spent all this time on developing technique and physical skills and on developing plays and systems and all these different tactics. And I'm not saying those things aren't important, they're incredibly important. But do we devote any time to actually sports psych and the mental side of game within practice? And she talked about her quote was this, the last time you coached a workout, how much of that did you integrate a mental training philosophy? And then she went more so into her philosophy is that we're going to treat mental training with the proportionality of its importance to our performance, which is high. And I just, one of the first college coaches that it hit home to me that it spent so much time investing in the sports psych side of things. And I just think that's so important. And it's not a sports psychologist just showing up, doing a talk. It's like an integration of sports psych into a program. And it's just a brilliant episode. And I had the good fortune, Coach Close had invited me over to spend some time with her. We had a chance to spend a couple hours together just talking and sharing, and her mainly asking questions, which is even more humbling. And we had such a great conversation. And I just give so many people like that so much credit that at this point in their careers, with so much success, that they still have an incredible open mind and incredible curiosity. And I would say some people outside the basketball world have asked me about the community of basketball coaches. And I say, what's brilliant about so many of you as coaches is your curiosity. Like, I just try and tell people, I'm like, hey, basketball coaches are some of the most curious, open-minded people that I've ever been around. Because generally, you as a coach, you just want to find a better way. You just want to find the way that works for you. You just want to find the way that connects for your players. Is that it doesn't have to be just this one way. There's so many ways to be able to be successful. And you know where I stand. I'm a games approach coach. I'm a CLA coach. I'm an ecological dynamics coach. And that's not comfortable for all of you yet. I give you all credit for so many of you exploring it, diving into it. It's the wave. It's the way. It's coming. And for some of you, it's already here. For some of you, it's not there. And some of you haven't even dove in yet. That's all good. But I just so encourage you to continue to approach your life and your coaching with just incredible curiosity. Be curious, be open-minded, suspend judgment. The world would be a better place if we all did that, like basketball coaches do. And that's really the part that I talk about. I've become such a proud advocate of the basketball coaching community in particular and coaches in general to anyone who's not a coach and talking about all of us in that way.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know, the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable, and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
Tim Martin, incredible skills trainer, coach. He's worked with Wemby, Tyrese Maxey. The list is incredible, but just incredible human being as well. But one quote that really stood out with me, because I deal with this, and we all deal with this as coaches, the slump of a player, confidence of a player. And he said this on the podcast. He said, a lot of times, if a player is going through a slump, it has everything to do with off the court issues. Maybe it's a family issue. Maybe it's a financial issue. So it really did change my perspective that if we can get players, or we can help players get in a good frame of mind and have their mind where it needs to be, then they can perform at a higher level. And that's really the thing that stood with me ever since he said that. Anytime, say, let's say my daughter's struggling shooting or something in a workout, then the first thing I will do is to try and dive into kind of, hey, what's going on? Do you have some tests today? What's going on? How's school? Like, in a really confrontational way to be able to see what else is going on. The second thing would be, oh, maybe there's a little technique refinement. But I think traditionally as coaches, we always try and solve problems. So we got to fix this technique, or we got to fix this tactic, when sometimes it's just the human being that particular day is going through something. So that was such a great coach and great, or great quote and great perspective from Tim Martin. Brandon Payne, so many great things that he shared with us in shooting, and it's just so great to have him share on the podcast. But he talked about movement, and obviously having coached Steph Curry, but movement of a shooter. And this one's really stood with me and really helped me connect and share kind of the way we try and play basketball with space and with players in space. There's not a lot of movement off of screens in terms of my style of play with my youth teams. It's more about being ready and being in space to be able to make that catch decision, that 0 seconds, 0.5 decision. So he said, you've got to move with great intent to be a good shooter. I'm a big proponent of every step you take leading into the catch, determining whether or not you're going to make or miss the shot. If you're not moving with great intent to that pass, and if you're loose and floppy through your movements, it's going to be hard to really flip a switch as soon as you catch it and get really tight and really get into your body and shoot the ball tight. I just love that kind of connection. I know it's a longer quote, but the idea being is, like, it's not like a technique necessarily that I have to emphasize to players. Oh, you got to be low. You got to have your hands in a particular place. I've found that those things are very individually different for all the best shooters I've been around in my 30 years in coaching. So I don't really focus on that as much as I focus on the intent, almost, hey, call the ball to yourself, call the ball to yourself. You've got to be ready. You've got to create this kind of this quantum field of understanding for your teammates that you are ready for the ball. If it comes to you, great. If it doesn't come to you, great. But you are sending a message to your team that you're ready. And that comes from an intent. Are you intentional off the ball at being prepared and sending that message to your teammates? And that's really connected for me. Greg Tonegal, who's Indiana Wesleyan head coach, incredible. Like, I look at some of the records and some of the wins, loss records, and some of the all-time win leaders, and Greg's on that list. Incredible success. One of the all-time winningest coaches in all college basketball. But he was just brilliant on the podcast. But his quote, at the end of the day, our style of play is a byproduct of our cultural influence. We're not playing it safe. I don't want my players to play it safe. What we say is greatness favors the fearless. And I love that idea, is that your style of play is a byproduct of your cultural influence. And that's where, like, I've said it and this put it into words for me a little bit, but I've said so much is that our culture is formed in practice. Our culture of our team is formed in practice because we practice more than we play. And at the end of the day, we want to make sure that our style of play always shines through in our practice because that's our culture. And obviously, being bold, being brave, Victor Lapina, who is Victor Lapina, was the former head coach of the Canadian women's national team, but he said it in his podcast as well. He said, "Be brave." It was that simple. He just wants players to be brave, especially in practice, that he would sometimes just cue players, "Be brave, be brave." And that's something that stuck with me. And a brave player is a better player. Aaron Fearn, so many of you obviously connected first with the concept of tagging up and offensive rebounding, defensive transition system. One of the first places many of you heard of it was on the basketball podcast. Australian coach, who's now the head coach at Charlotte. But he said this because we were talking mainly about a lot of differences in international and North American basketball. But he said, "I want my son or daughter to be coached hard. A lot of them don't understand how hard kids get coached internationally. How do you get better if you're not challenged?" And by getting coached hard, he wasn't referring to, and I know this, and we all talk about this, he wasn't referring to being mean to kids and making them run or anything like that. What he means by it, and this has stuck with me throughout, and I think this is the actual hard part about coaching. The hard part about coaching is holding people accountable. So what he meant by coaching them hard is that you teach something and then you hold them accountable to it. And I still see so many coaches giving such great information to players in a drill or in a practice situation, but then when they start playing, there's no intent to hold them accountable to doing those things. So obviously, if it wasn't important enough to you in games to hold them accountable to it, then it's probably not that important in practice either, and that's just about control. So you can't hold them accountable to everything, but what are the things that you need to hold them accountable to? And don't be afraid of coaching them hard in the sense that you hold them accountable to that. And that's such a big thing. Hoda Kasperini, Spanish coach, incredible, again, incredible podcast around teaching and learning and coaching basketball with that mindset. But the brain learns from complete situations. You can show your players a particular move and then tell them, try and imitate it. You start correcting individually, and now you start to focus on the things you want them to solve. And it was really this mindset, and the whole podcast really reflects back on this. But now this is the concept of what I share with many of you, which is, yeah, teach them something, let them explore it. Before you start giving them the information, before you start correcting it, let them try and figure it out. And then you can obviously correct them, add information, or put them into different situations where they have to try and figure out a way to solve it with that particular technique or tactic. And that was great. Dustin Kern's another incredible supporter, friend of the podcast, but he came on the podcast and it was awesome because he wanted to talk about some of the unique things they do in the offseason in terms of their player development. And they play a lot. They play a lot in the offseason as well. And he said, "We typically play twice a week. One will be 5-on-5 up and down, playing out of different concepts. They design the teams, there's a shot clock going, and then they play different concepts and they play different scores from time to time. And then just all the different ways that they manipulate the game in the offseason, particularly to be able to develop their players, was something that really stood with me." And I've shared that with many coaches who asked me some of the best advice. And I'm like, especially when handling the offseason, I'm like, find a way to be able to manipulate the different games you play in the offseason to be able to help shape your team's development. And Dustin's podcast was just an incredible resource of so much information like that. Doug Lemoff. Hopefully, at this point, you've all are familiar with Doug. You've all watched Doug. You've all been a part in some way of exploring Doug's sharing with all of us as coaches and what an incredible impact he's made on teaching and coaching and learning. But Doug's quote, "I'm only going to be able to cause people to think intentionally about a small number of things. So I need to be super intentional about them and I need to link them to the emotional setting." And I love that. And he talked about halftime. He talked about video. He talked about pregame. He talked about all these different things on his second podcast with us. But I just love that idea. As coaches, we know so much. We know so much. So we need to be very intentional about a small number of things that we're going to convey to our players to be able to help them. Because again, we know that too much can cause paralysis by analysis. And we want to be super intentional so our players can be super intentional. Sandy Brondello, who now Toronto Tempo WNBA head coach, longtime WNBA coach, had a chance to watch them practice actually, or her run a practice in Australia when I was there, and she was coaching the women's national team. That was last year. Just an incredible experience to see some of the things she talked about though on the podcast come to life. But the one thing that really stood out from the podcast is I asked her about coping, like being a professional coach and being able to cope with wins and losses and certainly ups and downs, which many of us, and this is probably the part that we don't talk about enough in coaching, is like the ups and downs are real. We all know that in coaching, like the highs are high, but the lows are super low. And those are the times that we really need to reflect and be able to help ourselves get out of the void, so to speak. And she talked about her quote, "When we can have a bad game, I cannot have the best coaching game, but the next day, the next morning, I have to be able to move on because we're holding on to something we can't change. The only thing we can change is what we're going to do in that moment." And it's really just a brilliant phrasing to be able to talk about being present focus and being able to reset yourself. The old 24-hour rule, you have 24 hours to lament after a loss before you move on. That was more of an NFL thing. I don't think many professions or many sports or many life opportunities have that much time where you're allowed to do that anymore. But this idea of being able to reset because we can't hold on to something we can't change. And that was just a great phrasing that I loved as well. Scott Harmatuck is a high school coach and man, longtime supporter. Scott, big shout out. Thank you. This podcast almost didn't see the light of day. We recorded it at the time, whatever reason, it wasn't. I felt like we could do better. I felt like I could do better. It wasn't anything Scott did. I felt like I didn't do a great job. And this happens sometimes with some of the podcasts. I'm not going to lie, where sometimes I just feel like, damn, I could have done better. I could have pulled out more. I could have done something else. And no doubt I'm competitive, like you're all competitive. So we don't always have the greatest kind of feel or vibe behind it. And that's why I have people like Debbie and Mark Jabo to be able to listen to the podcast after the fact or edit the podcast after the fact. And generally, they'll be able to send back real feedback and be able to say, okay, yes, this was awesome or this wasn't awesome. And many of them have surprised me. Like many times where I'm like, ah, that wasn't great. They come back and said, that was awesome. And I'm like, again, like in the moment, sometimes you're in the moment, you're thinking about the next play rather than what was actually the profound kind of thing that someone was saying. And that's a part of being a podcast host. But anyways, I'm grateful that this one came to light, is my point. I tabled it for a little bit and then finally I listened to it again and I had some other people listen to it and I said, actually, this is pretty badass. So Scott, thank you for your patience. And we shared it and it was all about coach moving from a traditional kind of block practice type of mindset, perfection drills, to more of a game-based practice approach and basketball immersion community member. So it makes sense. But sometimes we just have to let these kids be as good as they are and not hold them back. That becomes our problems as coach. I want to control this. I don't need that. That doesn't give me any more reassurance or anything for me to say that was my play. We scored. So he's basically referring to the fact that, again, sometimes we hold kids back. Often we hold kids back because we project onto them our perspective on what is right for them and what they should be doing. And sometimes, certainly, our expertise and our knowledge and our experiential knowledge, we can be the person that obviously tells them that this is the best thing for them. But I think we do it too much. And I think we don't do it in the right way sometimes as well. But Scott really drove that home with that point that basically is if it's my play and we score off of my play, does that change the score? No, it doesn't. We scored whether it was my play or not my play. So to be able to create space and permission, freedom comes from this notion of giving players permission to be the best version of themselves. And that's really a big part of that. And Scott's podcast is tremendous. If you're a high school coach, I can't encourage you enough to go listen to that one and just dive deep in terms of some of those things. Sundance Wicks, Coach Smiley, Coach Wicks, a number of people over my time have been connected to the star of all stars when it comes to sharing. And that's obviously Don Meyer. Had an incredible opportunity throughout my young years to be able to spend some time with Coach Meyer. Hosted him at the University of Windsor for a clinic. Had a chance to obviously go to his academy, like many of you who are a little bit older have got a chance to do. But to be able to talk to people like Coach Wicks about their time with Don Meyer and the influence that he's had on the game and on them as coaches has just been such a beautiful experience for me because I think so fondly of all the stuff that Coach Meyer did. And certainly not knowing it at the time, he was providing a blueprint for me in terms of ways to be able to share all the things that I've learned being a lifelong learner. And really, that's, I mean, basketball podcast, basketball immersion has become a platform for lifelong sharing and lifelong learning for me. Thank you again, everyone, for being a part of it. But Sundance's quote I love here, "The art here is understanding that you can scale simplicity. You can't scale complexity." Wow. Simple is sophisticated, I think, is what Matt Driscoll said on his podcast. And this just keeps coming back to me, coming back to me. Really, I do think you think about the Ben McCollums, the great coaches in college basketball that have risen, Crutchfield, different guys like that. They do really simple things. They really do. But then the simple things is where the complexity comes in. So if you run a side ball screen, it's not just a side ball screen. It's what can you then scale? You can scale changing angles of the screen to make sure you manipulate coverages. You can scale locations. You can scale speed, pace, how they arrive, different things like that. So it's like really a simple thing as a side ball screen. But within that, there's complexity. And if you focus more on the complexity of that one thing rather than bringing in all these complex things, then you can obviously scale and help your players and help your team be more successful. So simple is sophisticated, and you can scale simplicity. Love those two things that shine through from Sundance and from Coach Driscoll. Tobin Anderson, great friend. Again, going back 30 years. We worked the University of Maryland camp with Gary Williams. Gary Williams also was on the basketball podcast. That was a huge treat for me, talking about flex and talking about some of the different things that have evolved from our time together and just even the shape of our careers and all the different things, and remains a great friend to this day. But Tobin said, if you're going to be the same as everybody else, you've got to be a whole lot better. We wanted to make them play how we want to play. Make them play our style, make them play our tempo. The key is to get the game going in your direction. And again, this is just a great way of being able to share it with everyone. But just this mindset of, yeah, we can't do it all the same. If you do it all the same, you're not going to be as good as the team that does it better than you. And that really has always been a part of my coaching philosophy is one, whenever I was coaching in a league, look at the league and go, who are the top two teams and how can we compete against them? And then to a certain extent, that and then our personnel, and then determine, okay, what can we do to compete against them with the personnel we have? And then, yeah, I love how they play. Oh, I love how Dave Smart plays. I love how their style is. But if we do the exact thing they do, they're going to beat us because they do it better than us. And that's always stuck with me as this concept that Tobin put eloquently into words is that you can't be the same as everyone else. You've got to be yourself. And yourself, hopefully, again. Rob Senderhoff, again, incredible coach, incredible sharer, but he said, we don't gamble a ton for steals, but we get a lot of steals. Cool quote, but what stood with, he was one of the first coaches on the podcast that talked about attacking spinners. And this is something that's always been my philosophy. So I loved it. When he went into that, I could ask a few more questions that kind of was like, ooh, I wonder what he has thought about in terms of this. Something that I've done forever is like an automatic how to make our defense conceptual is that anytime you're one pass away and someone spins, you can attack them. So it's basically permission to be run and jump anywhere on the floor anytime someone spins and you're one pass away. And he's the first coach and maybe the only coach that's talked about this on the podcast. So it was a really cool concept to be able to dive into, but that anytime an offensive player spins, then their team is in full attack mode. And that was one of the things he said is that they're not intentional about gambling for steals, but they get a lot of steals because they're intentional about it being able to attack certain things. And spins was one of those things. Gerard Calhoun, again, incredible. Just watching his career, even just since he's done the podcast, but incredible coach and just a great reminder for me. But we try to generate as a staff 20 plus points, whether that's from baseline inbound, sideline inbound, ATOs, or whatever it is throughout the course of the game. We want to be really efficient in those areas. And I look at that all the time. And this is definitely, I'm certainly a conceptual coach, but I absolutely am obsessive about Bob Sobs and ATOs and being efficient and effective in those areas. And I've said this many times, especially to youth coaches, but if you're coaching a youth team, man, you've got to spend a lot of time on inbound, baseline inbound. If you can score on baseline inbound, in some games, especially when you're talking U14 and below, in some games, those can end up being half your points. And I've watched many youth teams and coaches ask me for feedback at different times. And I just said, man, you got to find a way to score off inbound. Like, if we're not scoring on baseline inbound, then there's a problem because nobody's scouting. generally. And it's like we can take advantage of something. And just that was a great connection that Coach Calhoun shared. And when he talked about it at that level, it reminded me how important it is at all levels. Carly Thibault, Fairfield coach, again, incredible podcast. But a term that I've always talked about this is basically this concept of go until you're stopped. So in transition, I get the ball, I try and hit ahead. We usually look early pass ahead ball side, early pass ahead weak side, or early and opposite, what I call in two side fast break. And if we can't pass ahead, then we want to go until we're stopped. And Carly threw this term out there called GUS, which is go until you're stopped. And then ever since the podcast, I've been using that. I've been using that throughout the world. It's really cool. It connects with all kids. It just gives them a simple phrasing and a simple cue to be able to give players as well, that if a player gets a ball and they immediately don't pass the ball, then we don't want to slow dribble up the floor. Okay, we're going to slow dribble up the floor and run offense at the 3-point line. If you get the ball and you can't pass ahead, then you're in a gus. That means go until you're stopped, because we're not trying to run offense. We're trying to go score. And I'll talk about that philosophy a little bit more in another podcast, just going from there. Julie Foulkes, who's now at Marshall, but she was at Transylvania before. Incredible coach, incredible podcast, episode 309. But some of you may have missed it. I can't encourage you to go listen to it, because again, she talked about so much to do with emotional intelligence and coaching and all the different ways that we can connect with people. But it's a little bit of a longer quote here, but we try to use a lot of different conversations and other pieces. One of the things that we know is praise the behavior you want repeated. If you are doing a study on neuroscience and trust, they would call that unexpected praise. And I just love that phrasing, unexpected praise. And they have done the studies. So something that, again, is evidence-based coaches. If within the first 40 hours, when somebody does something you pointed out in public, their brains will respond at a higher level. So ever since then, I've used the term, and I've tried to share this with coaches all around, this term of unexpected praise. It's just a great way to be able to think about it. And I encourage all of you to write that on your practice plans or write that on your desk in a post-it note and just remind yourself, how can I unexpectedly praise someone today? It doesn't have to be a player. It could be an assistant, could be someone in your building, could be someone in your life, but that unexpected praise. Don't we all want a little bit of praise sometimes? Don't we all want to know that we're on the right path? Don't we all want to know that we're belonging? Don't we all want to know that we're getting better? And I just love that way of phrasing it from Coach Foulkes. That's just an incredible way of saying it. Yolette McPhee-McCoon, oh my gosh, from Ole Miss. This was always, thank you, Coach, for responding to my DMs. Thank you for finding time for me. Man, she was always on my list of people I wanted to have on the podcast. I love the way that she approached coaching, and she nailed it on the podcast. And it was really good because she talked about her defense in particular and how they don't change it for anyone or anything. And just this kind of mindset, this is our defense, this is what we do, and we're going to do it incredibly hard and incredibly well. And she said, when I say we don't change our philosophy, it doesn't matter who we play. There are systematic things that we defensively that we will never change. It doesn't matter if we're playing zone. It doesn't matter if we're pressing. It doesn't matter if we're in man, half court, or full court. Systematically, there are things that we teach that we just don't change. And I love that kind of that mindset that you think about your program, your coaching, your defense in particular, because defense tends to have a lot more non-negotiables. It's what is something that we're not going to change, no matter what. And that's really what connects for me, the principles of play that I share, space, advantage, shot selection, and basketball being a game of opposites. So the opposite on defense, that's really stuck with me, is like just being more convicted in those things that no matter what, we're not changing these things. You need to create space for your teammate. And on defense, you need to take away space. We're not changing those things no matter who we play. We've got to find a way to be able to be successful doing those things. So for me, that has always stuck with me. And I just love that phrasing and that kind of mindset of being able to do these things really well. Sean Dennis, who coaches in Japan, again, incredible coach and philosophy. Really enjoyed my opportunity to be able to get to know him and learn more about him as I dove into kind of his background in my research prior to the podcast. Every podcast I do research prior to it, whether it's watching games. Sometimes I'm texting opponent coaches, assistant coaches on other staffs. Sometimes I'm just literally doing an internet search. There's so many different ways to do research nowadays. But it is part of the fun of the podcast is to try and learn things. that I want to bring to light for all of us as coaches or to learn more about. One thing about Sean's approach was obviously use of questioning. So he said this quote, "I changed my approach to a more questioning approach." And I think a lot of us understand this, that using questions instead of giving answers at first in the coaching process is a powerful, incredibly powerful tool for teaching and for your players to feel empowered and to be able to learn in ways that impact them long term more. But anyways, he said, "I changed my approach to a more questioning approach, which is still difficult because it takes a little longer." It does. Coaches, it takes longer. If I ask a question instead of telling an answer, it takes some time. But I'm okay with the sacrifice of intensity for the understanding and the deeper learning that can take place. So he said, "But what I found is it becomes a much better learning environment, and the lesson that the players learn as it goes on tends to stick more. And you start to see it flow more in the game because it becomes their answer rather than my answer." And I just love that part of it, the power of questions. So many people on the podcast have talked about that, especially people that have dealt with a lot of kind of evidence-based ideas around teaching and learning. But that was really cool. Dave Love, big shout out, good friend, been on the podcast. I've been on his podcast. Every one of those conversations is absolutely just the funnest for me. His open-mindedness, his willingness to be able to challenge me and challenge things in a really healthy way have been awesome. And Dave, appreciate you and that. But we talked about habit change. And I think that's one of the things he deals with the most is this concept of changing habits, especially in a shooting world. And he said this quote is, "I never track anything, especially early on in practice. I'm never like, okay, you've got to make five. If that's what I'm teaching, if that's what I'm cueing to, then the player is going to do whatever they want, whatever they feel is necessary to get that meaningless result." Wow, you said that so. And I've tried to express this to coaches that this is one of the problems with perfection drills in particular. And I was part of many perfection drills early on in my career. These drills are, it's okay, we got to get a certain score in 2 minutes, or got to get a score in this time. It's okay, they're not developing in that. They're not learning in that. All they're trying to do is whatever they need to get that meaningless result. Now, you may see it's meaningful, it's competitive, it's all that stuff. But as I feel that the game can teach that more than a drill can teach that. So I'd rather do that in a drill. But this really connected with me from Dave because, again, it taught me when I'm shooting with someone or I'm holding space for someone in a player development workout. It's like I'm very, especially early on in the workout, I'm not going to put any like goals to it. We're just going to explore. We're going to put them in situations where I challenge them and they have to figure it out. And we're not going to work on a meaningless result. Now, later on, sometimes we'll do different things or certain workouts will add some different things. Some, I can't remember who shared it on the podcast or some numbers around a number of threes you can make in a minute, number of threes you can make in 5 minutes. When Mike Nabors, again, incredible podcast guest, he talked about a why behind a lot of things on his podcast that he did. And obviously, famously, his green light shooting, which most of you have been exposed to. But putting numbers to things is valuable. But to Dave's point, it's not valuable early on. It's early on in a practice or a workout, especially when you're trying to give them an opportunity to be able to explore rather than try and just achieve a number. So I love that. Joe Crispin, man, what a beautiful basketball mind. Just I could do a podcast with Joe every single week and just feel that I've learned something, I've been inspired, and I feel like we're moving basketball parents and coaches in the right direction towards better ways. And that's really been a part of my gratitude for Joe. But he said a lot of coaches put guys in boxes, girls in boxes. We like to say that we give you the freedom with our help to create your own box. Players are not afraid of a role, but there's a difference between a role and a really tight, constrained box where you can't deviate from it at all. Love that. We've got role definition. That's one of the most popular things talked about on the podcast and different coaches' approaches to it. But I think Joe's point again is that is okay, that it can be really constrained. What are we doing? Are we letting them create the box or are we putting them in a box? And the different things that come with players being able to be free and be the best version of themselves versus us taking away that freedom and taking away them being the best version of themselves. I famously said many times that the best version of myself as a player was playing pickup after my career when no one was coaching me. And I got to just be free and be myself. And I hope almost all players get to experience that at some point in their life. But I hope a lot of players get to experience that while they're actually playing competitive basketball. And that's really what connected with me with Joe. Derek Fisher, Getting an NBA player's perspective who now is coaching is absolutely brilliant. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that one, just awesome. But he said for young players, one of the most important skills to develop is embracing delayed gratification as a basketball player. If you're 13 years old and you have dreams of playing professionally, and let's say everything works out, you're going to play basketball into your mid-30s. Why are we rushing what will be a 23-year process? Awesome. Wow. Great stuff. And it doesn't have to be playing professionally, but if I think about, okay, my daughter started playing basketball at 10. She's got maybe 10 years to play basketball. I don't have to rush everything into the first week. And back to that Doug Novak relentless patience part, but that really connected with me. And Derek talked about confidence. He talked about building confidence. He just said so many things that were just wise. And I just love that idea with it. Man, coaches, I have so many quotes and so many examples. And like many of you, I over-prepare and have 12 pages of different types of quotes or notes and things, just specific things from different podcasts. And man, I have thousands of notes overall from all the podcasts, but these ones in particular really resonated with me as I was going through my notes preparing for this. But I know I can't get through them all, but I'll give you a few more. But TJ Saint, who's been a huge supporter of mine in the podcast and my sharing, but just the phrasing, be confrontational. If you haven't watched his video on YouTube that he shared with us on the podcast, please do. It's just a PhD in coaching basketball offense and all the different phrases and terminology that he puts behind it. And I know he's having a big influence now with the New York Knicks on their staff, but be confrontational. Don't drive around people, drive through people. Huge phrasing that, again, is in my coaching. It's a very simple way of explaining to a kid to be able to be aggressive and be confrontational in your drive. Different things just really connect with me, and that one really did as well. Matt Painter, very early on a guest. Guys that have that mental toughness and that discipline, they're really just doing simple, fundamental things over and over again. And again, back to this simple, back to this simple. It's again, I get it in trainer culture and the world of basketball culture now. It's keep adding things. Oh, you got to add this move. You got to do this move. You got to do this dribble sequence. You got to do this. But I think, again, coaches like Matt Painter keep highlighting its fact that it's like the best players or the most mentally tough disciplined players. They're really just doing simple things over and over again. And that's really it. It's not fancy at the end of the day. So if we can highlight that to players and build on players' strengths, especially, and to be able to have them leading to their strengths, that's such a powerful part of this coaching process. Sherry Cole, former Oklahoma head coach and now author, and has been on the podcast twice. And what a teacher, just incredible thinker, a teacher of the game, teacher of life, and all the different things. But she said, if they can't execute that drill in a game, then what is the power of it? And coaches, like in reflecting back, like sometimes I don't know where some of the things come from, certainly in my mind, because I've heard so many different things, just like many of you have in coaching. And sometimes I don't credit the person. So I apologize for that because sometimes I don't know where these things evolve from in the universe. But this was one of those examples of saying, I say this now all the time. And I've said this example many times to argue, not argue, but try and lend support behind playing more basketball and more things that look like basketball. Basically, if you do a drill in practice, and if I added a live defender against that drill, would the drill still work? And if the drill doesn't work, then why are you doing it? And that's really her point. She said it much better. And when I went through my notes here, I saw that quote and I said, oh, yeah, that's a great way of saying it. But if they can't execute that drill in a game, then what is the power of it? Is absolutely great. Stop doing things that don't happen in the game, and your players will enjoy practice more. They'll thank you. And your players will have a chance to be able to transfer more things from practice to the game. And such a brilliant part of it. Coaches, again, I just cannot thank you enough. Like I said, I've missed out on so many amazing quotes, so many amazing moments that I can share with you. I can say that this podcast, over almost 100 countries in the world, at some point, there's been someone that's listened to the podcast. Like, obviously, United States, Canada, Australia, United Kingdom, Germany, those are the top five, six. Mostly English-speaking countries in terms of the number of listens from those places in the world. But you go down the list and you look and you go, okay, thank you. Someone from Rwanda, someone from Fiji, someone from Mongolia, someone from Uganda. And you just look at the influence and the impact of basketball has around the world, and certainly this podcast and all the influence it's had as well. Coach, thank you for your support. Thank you for all you do. And I look forward to another 400 podcasts. If you've listened to the podcast over the years, here's a few simple ways to help me out. Subscribe so you never miss an episode. Leave a five-star review. It helps more coaches discover the show. Share your favorite episode with a friend, teammate, or fellow coach. Give us a shout out on social media. Tag us and let us know what's resonating with you. And join the conversation, as always, by commenting or sending in your own coaching insights.